Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. And boy, are we going to be talking about it today with a perspective that I think you're really going to enjoy. This is Donna Sebo, and it is delightful to have you join me today. We are going to be talking about financial sorcery. Aha! Does that grab your ear when you hear the term sorcery and convey all kinds of images in your wonderful imaginative thinking world? Well, we have Jason Miller with us today. He has, for, well, the last 23 years of his life, he's been traveling all over the world, and he has been studying something that fascinates all of us. Magic. That's right. And magic employs the art of illusion. Well, why in the world would he feel it necessary to talk about money? How is it that magic and money can become a team that can work for you instead of against you? Well, Jason is going to tell us that in a little bit more. Hi, Jason. Welcome to the show.
Hi. How are you?
Well, I'm absolutely wonderful. And Jason Miller, you have traveled in a way that I think many people might say, oh, I wish I could do that. But you have done this in a, well, almost in an educational way on many levels, have you not?
Oh, yeah. I've a lot of my travels have been, I do take vacations like other normal people do, you know, the odd cruise here and there or something like that. But a lot of my travels have been to get initiated into different spiritual traditions, to learn about magic and the occult and so on, and, that kind of thing.
Jason, whenever people think about magic, the David Copperfield, Houdini, I mean, we have names that will pop up that we're all familiar with. And, of course, that's the art of illusion. It is meant to trick the eye. It is meant to be a distraction. If one is really skilled as a magician, they understand the workings of the mind so that they're able to create this illusion. Now, you have stepped away from that to a degree when you put together your book, Financial Sorcery, Magical Strategies to Create Real and Lasting Wealth. Now, I don't care what culture you study. The aspect of wealth, whether it was owning cows in Africa or dealing with various cultural aspects in Asia, no matter where you are on this planet, wealth has been something just about everybody, depending on what their environment has a status or representation of wealth as, this has always been quite significant. Why did you want to explore what you would call the side that's sort of a little bit unusual? I mean, we get financial books all the time, and your title intrigued me, Financial Sorcery. So I said, okay, what's this guy got that the other people who are telling us what to do, the pragmatic, down-to-earth ways of working with money for financial security and comfort. What else are you doing here? What made you decide to go into this venue?
Well, I should say that the magic that I've studied is not so much the prestidigitation and illusion for stagecraft and things like that, but more the hidden aspects of that exist almost in every religion and spiritual tradition on earth about how to use spiritual and elemental forces to make positive changes, to grow spiritually, and so on. And the biggest thing that brought me to applying this to finances is really changes in my own life. I think when I was young and I was in my 20s, I kind of gave short shrift to money and finances, and I just sort of didn't think about it too much. I considered money to be almost unspiritual.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a spiritual person shouldn't be obsessed with that kind of thing, or shouldn't he really have to think too much about that kind of thing. And I think a lot of us have that attitude, and that is ingrained somewhat in religion. You know, Christ mm-hmm. had said, you cannot serve both mammon and the Lord, and there are other messages that are similar. And, you know, when you really look at that statement, there is some truth to it. You can't serve both money and spirit. But what then are the alternatives? And as I grew older in my 30s and, you know, kind of living a bohemian lifestyle, just wasn't cutting it anymore, and then I get married and have children and so on, you start to look at the rest of your life and say, well, hey, you know, I should get my financial house in order.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you know, by that time, the skill set that I have is one of investigating these occult mysteries. So I started to look at how they are applied throughout the world, and every culture has them, from the Catholic bookstore around the corner that has novenas that will, you open up the chapter to help you find a job, to help you overcome financial difficulty. You turn to this page, you say this prayer. It's not fundamentally different than somebody with a spell book who opens up to, you know, this earth elemental, and, you know, you say this invocation to the Buddhist who is chanting a mantra to Zambala to increase wealth and so on. So I started looking at this seriously, and, you know, I think that you can't serve money, but there are two ways to then deal with money. The first is to avoid it completely. And I think that's what most people think of as the spiritual answer. And it is a spiritual answer. But to really avoid it, it really means becoming a monk or a nun or, you know, a wandering homeless mystic.
Mm-hmm.
And those are, you know, I know people that do that. And it's a valid thing, but it's not for me, and it's not for most people.
Well, let me stop you there for a moment, because even the monk, and this is something a lot of people don't want to pay attention to. You study any of the history. I don't care if it is a Buddhist monastery. I don't care if it's a Christian monastery, sanctuary, whatever. They had to be self-sustaining. They had to be able to grow their own food. If they could not do that, they had to be in a place where the food could be brought into them. So many times these people that are following a particular path, a guru, et cetera, let's say from India or someone like this, they are dependent on other people to supply them with what they need. And if other people do not have the means, then they're going to starve to death. They're not going to make it.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So even there, you can't entirely avoid the issue of money. You can tone down its influence on your life a little bit, but you can't entirely avoid it. So what I say is, if you can't serve it and you can't avoid it, then the only option is you need to master it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is too powerful a force, finances and money, to just not deal with it in some way.
Absolutely true.
And I think looking around the world today, we can see a lot of the problems in the world have been caused by people who are serving money, who have let money master them and their lives.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
I say,
giving the wrong power to the wrong place. Let's talk about some stats that you have right in the beginning of your book. You have information from the World Bank Development Research Group, and this is something that, for those of you listening, I think you might find these stats interesting. Anyone earning $47,500 a year is in the top 1% of income earners on planet Earth. If you make more than $25,500 a year, you are in the top 10% of income earners. The bottom 50% of the people on planet Earth live on less than $800 a year. Now, this is significant because you also bring out not just those points, but your perspective about the difference between being rich and being wealthy. And you used Buckminster Fuller, who said that wealth can be measured in the number of days that one can live one's normal lifestyle without a paycheck. When your assets and sources of passive income are high enough to provide sufficient income to support your lifestyle without your having to work for a paycheck, you are wealthy. Now, I'd never heard this statement by Buckminster, but I really appreciated that because I think that that is true. In financial prosperity is different for everyone, and not everybody wants to be a Warren Buffett or a Bill Gates. People say, oh, yeah, that'd be cool if I had that. But when you have abundance of money, there also is a positioning of responsibility, because if you're not going to manage it well, it's going to evaporate. It's just, I mean, lottery winners are notorious for this. They might earn millions of dollars, and in 5 years, it's all gone. You go, what in the heck did they spend it on? But it's a fact of life. I've known people that have had businesses worth millions and millions of dollars. I've interviewed them on my show. And because they turned it over to someone who they thought was managing the money wisely and well, all of a sudden, it's all gone. So you have these different points that you bring out in your book, and I really, really like it. And I like the fact that you say, look, folks, don't depend on job security. Don't depend on magical raises. And don't depend on a magical retirement protection plan. Boy, I really like that. Let's talk about emergency magic. I can imagine some of the people listening to this are saying, okay, all right, let's get down to some bare bones here. Donna, what is it that we could do? I sure could use some extra money. What do I do? What's the first step that I take to be able to become consciously present with what is really needed financially in my life? What would you say to them, Jason?
Well, you know, the first thing that people need to do in any situation, whether they are drowning in debt or whether they have 10 times the amount of money that they could ever possibly want, the first thing that people need to do, which it's amazing that more people don't do this, is to take stock of where they are and what they have. And this really means taking stock of two different things. Taking stock of all your assets, and this includes, you know, there are some people who will tell me, oh, well, you know, I don't invest, I don't have any investments. And then I'll say, well, you know, don't you have a 401k? Oh, well, yeah. Well, that 401k is invested. That's your money. You know, you should know how much there is and where it is. And so you want to take stock of everything that you have and everything that's coming in. And this is your paycheck. This is any kind of regular money from investments that's coming in, any kind of residuals from anything that you've ever done. So things like that. Then the next thing is your pile going out, your expenditures. This is every last bill that you have. Every, you know, from the mortgage down to your, you know, the tolls that you pay to get to work back and forth every day. And you wind up with two piles, the pile of money coming in and the pile of money going out. And when you take a look at this, it's amazing the sort of brain adjustment that happens just with this. Just with this. You end up looking and, wow, you know, I spend that much money at Starbucks every year? My God, what's wrong with me? Or you take a look at it and you think, wow, I have that much money, you know, sitting around here. Maybe there's something better I can do with that money. Or maybe there's a way that I can protect that money better than I have been. So that's really the first step, is just knowing where you are and what you need. You know, that will tell you what strategies you need to move forward. Because if your pile of money coming in is significantly less than the pile of money going out, and it doesn't matter what the volume is. As you said, you know, you've interviewed people with million-dollar businesses who go broke. And, you know, VH1 Behind the Music is practically a study in rock musicians who at one time were making millions of dollars and then lose it all due mm-hmm. to mismanagement and spending. The volume doesn't matter. A rich person who has a big paycheck every week can spend themselves into poverty, and a poor person who's working at, you know, a local hardware store just getting by can build wealth if they are doing it prudently. So that those two piles will tell you where you are and give you an idea of what strategy you need to apply to move forward in your life.
Now, one of the tools that you like people to utilize is meditation. And you say control of the mind is the key. And you say nobody should avoid doing meditation because it really is very significant. And that people should be mindful of how they breathe. And you talk about some different ways of breathing. You talk about the vase, the pillar, the spheres, and these are, why is this so significant? And when people do any of these breathing exercises, how in the world is this going to enable them to deal with financial sorcery?
Well, I'm glad you asked. It's funny because meditation previously, just a few years ago, was thought to be just this, you know, sort of another New Age practice or another practice that hardened materialists would look at and say, well, it's just, you know, fluffy nonsense. And today, I just read an article in Psychology Today where the Marines are teaching their soldiers meditation to have better control of their minds in stress situations and things like this. And of course, meditation, the best meditation is for me to link it to the breath. You can meditate on an object, but then you have to kind of have that object with you. Or you can meditate on a sound, but then, you know, if you're at work and you want to take a minute to meditate, people in the cubicle or the office next to you are going to hear you go, Om Mani Padme Hum. You know, it's a little strange. But you're always breathing. So by taking control of your breath, you're taking something that is part of your automatic system, your autonomous system, and you're making it consciously controlled. You're taking something that is essentially a habit of the body and making it part of your conscious control. This has a ripple effect into the rest of your life, because when you think about times when you're scared or stressed or something like that, what happens to your breath? It starts to get short. It starts to get shallow. You start breathing with only the upper chambers of the lungs. And this is a response to the body. So if you are trying to, say, save money because you've been spending yourself into oblivion, and you're at the store, and you're at that moment where, you know, I see this Blu-ray that I really want, but I know I need to stop buying this kind of thing, you start to get that response, that stress response. Or if you're deep, deep in debt and the bills come in, you know, you get a letter from a collection agency. You know, most people in debt, they take those and they just shove them aside. They never open them. They never call them because they don't even want to look because mm-hmm. they know it's that bad. If you can control the breath, if you can say to yourself, before I do anything, I'm going to breathe deep. I'm going to link my awareness to the breath. All of a sudden, you unwind that body-mind response. And suddenly, rather than thinking out of bad habits and reaction, your real conscious mind starts to take hold, and you think, okay, the easy thing is for me to ignore this right now, but I have to deal with this ultimately, and it may as well be right now, and you go ahead and open the letter. So meditation is just the most important thing.
Now, you have a couple of comments. One is that you have what some people would call a sacred place in your home. You have what others would call an altar, and this goes throughout cultures in the world. We have a place where we want to consciously connect, and symbols are very important. People really, really, again, this is around the world, people really like to have those particular things that they can say, this resonates with me on a spiritual, mental level. And so those little altars, and you go into detail on yours, but you also talk about giving offerings. Now, if anybody's ever read history, again, we'll go into different cultures. You go into the East Indian history, or you go into the Native American history. You go into Greek history. You go into African history. There is, it's been going on for millions of years, that the wise ones would always say, one, have an attitude of gratitude, two, always give something back to the earth and or to the spirits, or however you choose to describe it. And you say this is something that's very important because it makes a connection that is really, really appreciated. The people in Ireland believe in the little people, the spirits, the fairies. You have people around the world that talk about different aspects of their cultural understanding. Why has this become so significant? Because you dedicate quite a bit of time to this. Why is this so important?
Well, you know, I like to liken it back to the normal relationships we have with other people. So, you know, I say if you approach somebody that you've never met and that you have very little, or you've just met that day, and you ask them for a favor, say you ask them for $100, chances are they're going to say no. If you ask somebody that maybe is a coworker, and you have a history of maybe, you know, you've bought them lunch once or twice, they've bought you lunch once or twice, you've gone out for drinks and so on and so forth, there's a relationship, and part of that relationship, apart from just speaking, is this exchange of, you know, I'm going to do something for you, and you're going to do something for me, and this builds up a relationship. So they might say yes. And then if you go to your best friend, who you have a long relationship of this kind of thing with, they're going to say, of course, here's $100. Is that all you need? Is there anything else? You know, are you in trouble? So you're building this relationship. So whether or not you believe in the specifics of a particular tradition, for instance, in Iceland, there are, you know, new businesses in towns will sometimes actually have to legally get clearance from a shaman to say whether, you know, there are elves or not occupying the space you want to build a factory at.
Same thing in China.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Hawaii and the kahuna, same thing there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So by making offerings, you're acknowledging the universe as this living thing that has, if not an intelligence the way that we think of human intelligence, an awareness to it. And you're acknowledging spirits of the land, the sky, the underworld, and so on and so forth. And you're saying, you know, I'm giving you this offering on a regular basis. You're not necessarily doing it with, like, today I'm giving you this offering in exchange for blah, 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 blah. You're not trying to contract a business deal. You're just trying to say, hey, thank you for providing for what you've provided for me. Here's an offering. You know, I realize that some of the ways that I live as a human might be inconvenient, and here I mean, like, you know, polluting streams and building roads where lots of people are stressed out, this can have an effect on the spiritual environment of a place. And, you know, here you go. Here's an offering to say thank you and to say sorry and to just acknowledge the interdependence that I have with the world around me. And what you find that when you do this, the world responds. The universe responds back. And when you need something, the universe kind of steps to attention like your best friend and says, yeah, okay, we can help make that happen. What do you need? So when you're, for instance, doing one of the rituals in the emergency magic section or something like that, it helps to have this history of making offerings because the universe then steps forward and says, yeah, buddy, what can I do for you?
Absolutely. Now let's talk about another aspect in your book, because I know that you have got so many fascinating perspectives that you're presenting. Let's talk about the set point, because you bring out information regarding, you use the aspect of weight. And my goodness, I just was astonished at some of the things that I witnessed this last week when I was on the road traveling. And you talked about how there's set points physically. You talked about yourself, how you were very comfortable with being overweight at a certain time. And you decided you wanted to release it, so you went on a certain food program. And you said to be able to get down to the point that you really wanted to be, you had to allow the body to do its job, the body to reset its set point. Now, how is this in relationship to money? I mean, I think that this is a very significant point, because many people are locked into a particular level of thinking regarding financial flexibility and freedom, and they don't realize that they have a set point. Let's talk about that quickly, because I know we're running out of time here.
Sure. The set point is all about where you're comfortable versus what you want. And they're not the same thing. You know, we can sit back and say, well, I'd like to be making $250,000 a year instead of $40,000 a year. But if we were raised in sort of a middle class kind of environment, we were raised by people who were probably making $40,000-$50,000 a year and living a certain lifestyle. So we're comfortable with it. Same thing with people that grew up in poverty. They may want riches galore, but they get comfortable with living at the poverty line. And it's not that they like living at the poverty line. It's not like they don't know that there's something better. But in their deep mind, underneath their conscious want and desire, there's this comfort with where they are. And then when you start to break out of that, other people with a similar set point might react badly. Like, you know, well, why are you trying to do that? You know, we're all in the same boat. Is this not good enough for you? So this set point can be very ingrained. And so in terms of money, you have to do a little bit of work to reset this set point in the deep mind. And it involves both ritual and spiritual work, but also some social engineering. You know, if all of your friends are roughly at the same financial level as you, then where you're at is constantly reinforced. So if you go out and you actually make friends with people who are at the level you want to be at, it's a challenge to that set point. You mm-hmm. might even feel uncomfortable in certain situations, but it's a good discomfort because it's a challenge to get to that point. And soon you reset your set point. You see this, you know, a lot of parents can see this. They have kids and they're like, you know, I don't want my kids growing up in this neighborhood.
Right.
And I would rather them grow up in a different.
That's right. And it's setting a different example. You have to be able to see what the difference would be so that you can look and say, is this really, to yourself, ask yourself the question, is this really what I want? Is it not what I want? If this is not what I want, then what do I want. I know we're just about out of time, Jason Miller, and I've really enjoyed having you as a guest today. Financial Sorcery is the title of his book, Magical Strategies to Create Real and Lasting Wealth. There are so many things that he covers in the book: job-finding magic, promotion, entrepreneurial, emergency magic. I mean, you have all of these different components. He's got fascinating exercises in this book that is very unlike anything I think that you will have read. But he also has some very down-to-earth information, too. Jason, you have a website that is quite a mouthful, innominendum.com, or people can go to Financial Sorcery or Strategic Sorcery.com. And the first one is I, N like Nelly, O, M like Mary, I, N like Nelly, A, N like Nelly, D like Donna, U, M like Mary.com. Jason Miller, thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you for having me, Donna. I had a great time.
It was good. We are going to be taking a break for just a minute. Financial Sorcery or StrategicSorcery.com. Check it out. I think you'll find his book a fascinating read, Financial Sorcery. Jason Miller, my guest. We'll be back in just a minute.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Oh my goodness, it feels so good to be back in studio. I enjoyed my week away, and I haven't had a vacation for years, and this is the first one that I took. We were in the Bahamas. It was absolutely amazing. It made me appreciate the Pacific Northwest more than ever before. I know those of you that are in Florida, you absolutely love it. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous state, but I'll tell you what. I love the coolness and temperatures of the Pacific Northwest. I'm more of a cool weather type of person, but wow, what a marvelous time. And for those of you that I met in Florida and as we were going through the Bahamas, I just feel like I was so fortunate to meet such wonderful, wonderful people from different parts of the United States. And, of course, that's one of the great things about cruises. It just enables you to meet people from around the world. We met people from Macedonia. We met people from the Ukraine. We met people from the Philippines. We met people from, oh, my goodness, so many different countries in the world. And their stories were just absolutely marvelous. So, again, I'm glad to be back at home in studio, but that's one of the gifts that travel gives you. It gives you a perspective on what other people are living and how they are living, the positives, the negatives, and it sure does make you appreciate the good USA coming back into the United States with all the abundant blessings that we have here. I can tell you, it really does make a difference. Well, I wanted to give a quote here. The actress Salma Hayek, she said, "There's nothing better in life than being a late bloomer. Success can happen at any time and at any age. You can have a spiritual awakening and discover a new side of yourself. And best of all, love can happen at any age. Oh, let me tell you, that is so true. So true. I have a very dear friend who is delightfully 92 years young. She got married for the second time in her 80s. She's celebrating her 9th anniversary, and she is just beaming. Marjorie is just an absolutely beautiful woman married to a wonderful guy by the name of Dan, and she's true demonstration that you can have love in your life regardless of age. So for those of you that are younger that may think, oh my goodness, she's in the 80s, who cares? I'm in my 20s, I'm looking for Mr. or Ms. Wonderful. Well, don't give up hope. You're going to find that special person. But remember one thing. You have to do the job on yourself. You have to be that individual that is going to be able to, well, be what you know you should be as a good partner. And I'll share a story with you in just a minute. Before I do that, though, I do want to bring up the fact that on November the 3rd, we are going to be doing Quantum Mind 4. Now, for those of you that are in Western Washington, this class, which is on a Saturday, will be from 10 until 4, is wonderfully interactive. And the first part of the class is going to be taught by Robert Newman, who is a feng shui master and a specialist in wellness with herbs and Chinese medicine. So he's going to be sharing secrets of longevity, and I, in the second half of the class, will be working with you so that you can be aware, more aware, of your own intuitive processes. Because I believe that the gifts of the psychic self belong to everyone. There is no exclusivity with it. Your talents should be appreciated, and you should have confidence in yourself. So we're going to be able to do that. And it's going to be held at the Bridgeport Place here in University Place, Washington. And all of the information is up on my website. And if you'd like to call me and make a reservation, please do so at 253-582-5604. We're only going to be able to have space for 25 students because we want to give you that personal attention. So again, mark November 3rd, that Saturday. Come on in. Welcome in the attitude and the expectation that the new year is going to really bring you some very special gifts. So we'll have that and much more that I'll be sharing with you about the class coming up. I said I was going to, oh, I almost forgot. You can call in if you like. 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. I was going to share with you a story about attracting a mate. Now, this is something I remember many years ago being told to me. There was a young woman who was going to college, and she went in to see her chaplain at the college, and she sat down in front of him, and she was just totally disgusted, just totally disgusted. And he said, gee, doesn't seem like you're in too good a mood. What's the matter? And she said, oh, I'm just so bored with all of these nincompoops that I've been dating. I know that's not a very nice thing to say, but she was really frustrated. She said, I really want to have a partner in my life. I want to have someone that I can share experiences with. And she went on and on and on and on. Well, he let her talk. And the chaplain quietly asked her a question after she had finished her verbal explosion of frustration. And he asked her a question. Do you think you would make a good partner, a good wife? Well, she was surprised by that question, and she thought about it. She said, yes, I really, really am ready to make a commitment in a relationship. So he said, okay, I want you to do something for me. I want you to take a pad of paper, and I want you to take 3 pages, and at the top of each of these pages, I want you to, actually 4. He said, I want you to take 1 on mental talents, physical attributes, spiritual perspective, and financial perspective. Mind, body, spirit, finances. He said, I want you to make a list of the qualities of character under each of those categories that you would like your prospective mate to have. She looked at him, and he said, just trust me on this one. I don't want you to come back to me. We'll talk about this more. I want you to do this. I really want you to think about this. And she said, okay. So it was a couple of weeks later, she came in, and she said, okay, I've got my list. And he said, all right, now let's go through the list. So they proceeded to go through all of the various attributes and qualities and things that she had written down. So he questioned her about certain things, and she said, well, maybe I'd change my mind on this or that or the other. So they spent a couple of hours going through the list until finally she said, well, I think everything that is there, everything that I've written down, really epitomizes the quality of person that I really want to have in my life. And he said, okay, now, this is assignment number two. You are to take these sheets of paper, and I want you to read them once a week, and I want you to put the envelope in a place where it's convenient for you to do this. And he said, you must be dedicated to this. I want you to read your list once a week. And I don't want you to be concerned about how you're going to meet anybody. I don't want you to be concerned about anything. I just want you to focus on the qualities of character and personality that we have summarized in these lists. Well, she looked at him as if he was a little bit nuts, but she said, okay, I've tried everything else. I might as well try this. I've got nothing to lose. He said, well, that's a good attitude. But he said, I want you to really, when you're reading this, I want you to think about these qualities of character, and also that you will recognize these qualities of character in the individual when you meet him. Well, it was well over a year later. The student was going to be graduating. One day, he sees her running towards him. He happened to be in a particular area of the school, and she was just beaming. She was just glowing. Now, he hadn't seen her for over a year, and she was a little breathless, and she said, well, it worked. And he said, what do you mean it worked? What worked? And she held up her left hand, and on her ring finger was a gorgeous engagement ring. And he said, well, you'll have to come by and tell me the story. I'm on my way to a meeting. And she said, okay, I'll make an appointment. So she did. And she was just glowing. And he said, okay, tell me what happened. And she said, when I walked out of your office after you had told me what to do with the list and read it every week and keeping the list handy and being diligent about it, she said, I really thought it was silly. It was very, very stupid. I really didn't think it would work, but I was just so frustrated. And she said, many months went by, but I gave you my word, and so I kept it. And I would take my list out once a week when I was by myself, and I'd read through it. And lots of times I'd think, oh, this isn't going to happen. There's no such person out there like this. She said, 3 months ago, I was attending a concert that was going to be going on in the afternoon here on campus, and one of the fellows I happened to be dating at the time, he was escorting me, and she said he wasn't really the type of person I wanted to be with, but that's okay. We were going to the concert, and I didn't want to go by myself. Well, we had gotten there early because parking is always a tough thing to do, and my escort said, well, let's go get a cup of coffee. So she said we went off to a place on campus here where they have coffee. We were sitting there. It was a beautiful day outside, and this stranger walks up, and he's lugging an instrument in its case, and he asks us where the concert hall is on campus because he was lost. And so she said, well, we'll be happy to walk you over there because we're going to the concert, and we went and walked over, and she said after the event, we went backstage and met with the musician that we had met, and we got to know and be introduced to a number of the other performers, and she said it was magical. The chaplain said, okay, so what happened? And she grinned, and she said, well, I am marrying that musician. He looked at her. He said, really? She said, yes. After the performance, we were chatting, and the conversation just seemed to expand. She said, the guy I had come to the concert with, he went off with somebody else. And she said, we got so engaged in talking, we just talked for hours. And there was this click that occurred, this feeling. I couldn't shake it. There was this harmony between the two of us. And we started dating, and I found out about his family. And I just couldn't believe what I was discovering, because this individual, after a couple of months of being together and going out, meeting family and interacting in various ways, I realized that this was the person that I had been desiring in my life. And she said, we're going to be married next year after I graduate. Now, the reason I share that story with you, and it is a true story, is because when we focus with clarity, and Jason was talking about money, we were discussing money in the first half hour, we were talking about a set point. Sometimes to get past those set points, we have to open our minds up. If you've had a stinking life, or you've had stinking relationships, or stinking whatever, you need to be able to put yourself in that mindset that's going to change that stinking thinking. And when you can put yourself in that different environment, that different mindset, and you're consistent with it, there's a gradual shift that occurs. Well, I've got some other good things to share with you. Donna Sebo here, back from vacation, 888-627-6008. When we come back, I'll share more good things with you, including a recipe. Yes, always. I love food. I don't know about you. We'll chat when I get back. Don't go away.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com. That's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N. And find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007. That's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Okay, get out that pad of paper and pen, and I'm going to share a real quick recipe. Pork lo mein. Yes. Chow mein. Pork lo mein, yes, that's what we're going to have. And, you know, you can use any kind of meat with this kind of recipe. And one of the things I love about Chinese recipes is that they can be flavorful, they can be fixed quickly, but you do have to do all the preparation in the beginning, you know, the slicing of the vegetables. All of that takes time. Or if you're like me and you're lazy, you get frozen veggies and you just put them out so that they're room temperature. And, or even if they're just a little bit, just a tiny bit still frozen, they cook up so fast, it is marvelous. We live in an incredible time where we can get just about anything we want at a grocery store. It's just, it's absolutely amazing to me. I was on a small cruise this past week to the Bahamas, and people will talk about this so-called magic environment in the Bahamas. But, you know, I learned a lot. I learned that they cannot be self-sustaining. I learned that on Nassau, for example, the soil is so poor, they cannot grow good food. That's right. They have to import everything. They even have to import water, and they're surrounded by water. And there are islands, there are 700 islands in the Bahamas, there are islands that have natural freshwater lake. So they have to bring that fresh water in to NASA. And yet some of the biggest movie stars, Tom Jones, Oprah Winfrey, Tom Cruise, I should say, Oprah Winfrey and others own property there. Oh, their homes are just spectacular. But it truly is a place of luxury. They very seldom have meat in their diet because it's too expensive. And fish is primarily something that is in the diet. And if they have chicken, it is maybe the Sunday meal, like it used to be in the early days of America. People had chicken dinners. I think that's why fried chicken became so popular, because you could only have it once a week. It's an amazing, amazing environment, and the people in the Bahamas, they're beautiful people. They really are. But it really opens your eyes to how important self-sufficiency is. And that is something that we need to remember as the American culture. We need to understand that sending stuff offshore is not necessarily the best thing to do. We need to be able to take care of what we've got here and reinforce our own innovative personalities and styles so that self-sufficiency can be there as it was at one time. And that comes with education, understanding environments, and how to work with them effectively and well. Okay, let me give you this recipe for pork lo mein. This is so easy. And you know what? If you're on a budget, this is so reasonable to fix. And you can substitute different vegetables. You're going to need about a half a pound of boneless pork loin. Now, understand, if you don't like pork, use chicken. You might be able to use fish with this, but you need something that's got more of a texture to it when it comes to a meat. Beef is very, very good. You're going to need a third of a cup of chicken broth, and you might want to have a little bit of extra on the side. Now, this is with the pork. So you could use a chicken broth with the pork and or the chicken itself if that's what you wanted to do. And if you wanted to use beef, you could use beef broth. You're going to need a tablespoon of soy sauce, 2 teaspoons of cornstarch, a teaspoon of sugar, 2 to 4 cloves of garlic. You want to chop those very, very fine. 2 teaspoons of finely chopped, peeled, fresh ginger. Oh, ginger, fresh ginger is wonderful. 2 cups of fresh sugar, snap peas. It's about, 6 ounces, whatever. You could add a little more if you wanted or less. 1 cup of baby carrots, baby cut carrots, cut lengthwise into 1/4-inch sticks. And if you don't have the baby carrots, just use regular carrots. Make them, just julienne them if you want. And then you're going to need 4.5 ounces of fresh linguine or regular noodles or whatever noodle you'd like. You could use linguine is good. If you wanted to use angel hair pasta, if you didn't want to use wheat, then use rice noodles. Just understand that if you use rice noodles, they cook up really, really fast. And you want to cut them into 2-inch pieces. And then you're going to need 1/2 cup of thinly sliced red onion. It's great for color in the recipe. But if you don't have red onion, use a regular onion. Just remember, you want it really thinly sliced. And then you may want some toasted sesame seeds. So you can get those already toasted, or you can just heat up a pan, put some sesame seeds in it. They toast up in just a minute. It's really great. Now, this is what you do. You want to trim the fat from the pork. You cut the pork with the grain into 2 by 1-inch strips. And you want to cut the strips across the grain into 1/8-inch slices. And if it's partially frozen, it's going to be a lot easier for you to cut, by the way. And it takes about an hour, hour and a half, depending on your freezer, to freeze, a 1/2 pound of boneless pork loin. In a small bowl, you want to mix your chicken broth, your soy sauce, the cornstarch, your sugar, garlic, and ginger. Just whip that together with a whisk really quickly. Put that to the side. And then you want to heat your water, heat some water, maybe about 2 quarts worth to boiling. You're going to put in your snap peas, the carrots, and your linguine. You let everything come to a boil. Now, if you're using rice noodles, it's going to cook just really fast. So if you use regular wheat pasta noodles, they take a little bit longer, 2 to 3 minutes max, because you want them al dente. And if it's the rice, just know it may take a minute. That's how fast they cook. And if you have a wok or a 12-inch skillet, you put some cooking spray in there, and you heat it over medium-high heat until cooking spray starts to bubble. You put in your pork and onion. You cook and stir about 2 minutes. You want to cook if you're using pork until it doesn't have any pink in it anymore. And this is really, really fast. And then you put in your broth mixture with the peas, carrots, and linguine that you have drained. And you just cook and stir until the mixture thickens. It's going to take you a whopping 30 seconds. If you need to thin it, use more broth. If you find that the combinations are thickening up too intensely, just add a little bit more chicken broth. And then put it on a platter and serve it. It's going to serve maybe 4 to 6 people. It is a delicious meal. It's a great way to use leftover vegetables too. Well, my goodness, we're out of time. We have a fabulous lineup of guests this week. Tomorrow we're going to be talking about the yawning. That's right, Rabbit River Chronicles. Oh, this is so much fun. If you loved Harry Potter, if you loved The Hobbit, if you like this kind of theme, you're going to enjoy what Janine Kimmel has put together. Yes, the yawning. Wonderful, wonderful story, and we'll be sharing with you tomorrow. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. Have a magnificent day wherever you are, or evening, and we'll be back here, same time, same place. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.